You ever hear those stories? You know, someone living rough looks like they have nothing, and then boom, turns out they were sitting on a fortune the whole time.
Yeah, it's a real mind bender.
Right. Makes you think, are there other kinds of riches we're just missing? Maybe, like spiritual ones?
That's actually a great way to put it. It really gets to the heart of what we're exploring today.
Okay.
We're diving into this idea of wealth in Christ. We're using Pastor Tim Travis's series on Ephesians as our guide, mainly his sermon, Our Wealth in Christ, the Mystery of the Church.
Ah, okay.
But we're also pulling in another message of his, The Unfeigned Faith of a Mother, to kind of see how this all plays out practically.
Got it. So the big mission for this deep dive, it's this mystery, right? What is it? Who gets included? And I guess the million-dollar question, what does it mean for you listening right now in your day-to-day, especially thinking about that second sermon on real, genuine faith?
Exactly. So let's unpack this mystery.
Yeah, let's do it. Where do we start, Paul?
We have to start with Paul, yeah. Think about where he is when he's writing Ephesians. He's in prison in Rome.
Not exactly a corner office.
Not at all. But Pastor Travis points out something crucial. Paul calls himself a prisoner of Jesus Christ, not just a prisoner.
Like it was intentional, part of a bigger plan.
That's the idea. Like God put him there for a reason, even in chains. And it was directly linked to his work with the Gentiles.
Which wasn't exactly popular with everyone back then, was it?
Definitely not. The sermon mentions how much resistance Paul faced from parts of the Jewish community. It even got violent, like we read about in Acts.
Wow.
But, ironically, being imprisoned actually opened up new channels for his message. He was reaching people right inside Caesar's own household.
So from this like really tough spot, he starts talking about this mystery. What does he mean by that? It sounds, well, mysterious.
It does, but it's not like a detective novel mystery. In this context, mystery means a divine secret, something God planned but kept hidden in the Old Testament times.
Okay, a hidden part of a plan.
Exactly. And Esther Travis emphasizes that the church itself is presented as this kind of intervention, or maybe a parenthetical age.
Parenthetical, like a side note, or an interruption in God's main story with Israel.
Sort of like that. Imagine the main story focusing on Israel, then there's this pause and this unexpected period the church age begins. Different focus includes different people. Then the original story with Israel is set to resume later.
Okay, I think I get the picture.
And Pastor Travis notes this church age, or current age basically, stretching from Christ's time to now, 2025 in the sermon's context, is defined by grace.
Grace. And the next big thing expected is the rapture.
That's the next anticipated event for the church, yes. And it's important, as the sermon highlights, Paul's writing this to real people in actual local churches.
Right, not just theologians debating abstract ideas. These are meant to be practical truths.
Absolutely, for everyday believers. So let's dig into the key parts of this mystery Paul lays out. First off, Pastor Travis points out, Christ himself promised the church.
Ah, yeah, Matthew 16:14. I will build my church.
And the gates of hell shall not prevail against it. Powerful stuff.
It really is. Shows its staying power, doesn't it? Despite everything.
For sure. It underlines that nothing has stopped the church's progress.
Okay.
Second key point, this whole thing wasn't fully revealed before Paul.
Right. The sermon mentioned Ephesians 3:5, Romans 16:25, Colossians 2.
Yes, Colossians 1:25. They all stress that this was kept secret for ages, but now it's being revealed to God's people. Makes you think about God's timing,
Totally. He reveals things when the time is right.
Precisely. And this wasn't just some small detail. It was massive. It involved bringing Jews and Gentiles together into one body in Christ.
Whoa. Okay, that's huge. Ephesians 3:6, right? Fellow heirs, members of the same body.
And partakers of the promise in Christ Jesus through the gospel.
Yeah.
Think about the history there, the separation, the tension.
Even now you see division. So that idea of total unity in Christ, that's revolutionary.
It absolutely was a core part of this mystery. And then there's the fact that Paul himself was specifically tasked with this.
He was the guy chosen to tell the Gentiles about these unsearchable riches of Christ. That's Ephesians 3:7-8.
That's it. And think about Paul's background, deeply Jewish, a Pharisee. Then God gives him this mission primarily to the non-Jewish world.
Talk about an unexpected assignment. Really shows God works in surprising ways.
It really does. And the final piece here, this mystery wasn't meant to stay secret forever. It was intended to be made known widely.
Ephesians 3:9 talks about God's eternal purpose being revealed through the church, even to like spiritual powers.
Yes, the rulers and authorities in the heavenly realms. It connects back to that idea in Deuteronomy 29:29, the secret things belong to God. until he decides to reveal them.
So the church isn't just a backup plan. It's actually central to showing God's wisdom and plan.
Exactly. It's a key part of his eternal purpose, brought out into the open. Now, the sermon then shifts a bit, talking about the church and Israel having distinct programs. This part gets really interesting.
Okay, how so?
Well, Pastor Travis brings up Daniel's prophecy of the 70 weeks, Daniel 9. He explains that because Israel, as a nation, rejected the Messiah when he came, that prophetic timeline got paused.
Paused. So parts of it happened, but not all.
Right. The sermon mentions the amazing accuracy of the first 69 weeks. That's 483 years leading right up to Jesus entering Jerusalem. Just as predicted, referencing texts like Nehemiah and Zechariah.
Wow. Okay. So the clock stopped ticking then.
According to this view, yes. Israel's rejection put the prophetic clock on hold. And this church age we're in, it's seen as an intervention, this kind of parenthesis we talked about,
yeah.
Not detailed in that original Daniel prophecy.
And the idea is that when the church age ends with the rapture,
then the final week, that 70th week from Daniel's prophecy, which is understood as the tribulation period, will begin, and God's focus returns specifically to Israel.
So it's really important, as the sermon stresses, not to mix up God's plan for the church now with his future plans for Israel. Two distinct things.
Very distinct. Getting them confused can lead to some big misunderstandings, theologically speaking. So, after laying that groundwork, the sermon pivots to us. How do we, living in this church age, actually access this wealth in Christ?
And prayer is the key.
Prayer is presented as the access point. Ephesians 3, verses 14 to 21 becomes the focus here.
Okay, what are some of those riches we can tap into?
Well, first, there's his power. Experiencing God's power working within us in our inner person. Kind of like 1 Timothy 4.8 says, godliness has value. It's about inner strength.
An inner power source. I like that. What else?
Second, that Christ can actually dwell, like make his home in our hearts through faith. This leads to being rooted and grounded in love. Colossians talks about this too, being established.
That image of being rooted,
yeah.
It feels so secure, like an anchor in storms.
It really does. Gives you stability. Third, through prayer and faith, we can start to comprehend, to grasp just how immense Christ's love is. Even though it's beyond our full understanding, we can experience it.
Love that surpasses knowledge. That's profound.
It is. And finally, the potential to be filled with all the fullness of God. Colossians 1.18 and 2.9 really hit this home, pointing out that all the fullness of God dwells in Christ.
Filled with God's fullness. Wow. But this isn't automatic, right? The sermon mentioned needing to be totally occupied with and fully surrendered to Christ.
Absolutely. It's not passive.
Right.
Romans 12.12 comes to mind, presenting ourselves as living sacrifices. It requires that full surrender, being totally devoted in every part of life.
Yeah.
That's how we experience this fullness.
Makes sense. It's a deep commitment.
It is. And right at the end of that section, Paul hits us with that incredible promise in Ephesians 3.28 that God is able to do far, far more, exceedingly abundantly, above all we ask or even think.
That's just huge, an amazing promise to cling to. Okay, so now let's connect this to the other sermon, the unfeigned faith of a mother. How does that one show this wealth in Christ in action?
It's a fantastic illustration, really. It shows the real-world impact of genuine faith, especially how it passes through generations.
Right. Pastor Travis talks about Timothy and Paul remembering his unfeigned faith.
Exactly. 2 Timothy 1.5. Paul says that faith first lived in Timothy's grandmother Lois and then in his mother Eunice. Unfeigned, meaning real, authentic, no mask.
A faith legacy. That's beautiful. And the sermon hinted they faced real struggles. Eunice and Lois, maybe an absent father.
Yeah, it seems likely they faced hardship, possibly raising Timothy without his Greek father around. But their commitment to teaching him about God didn't waver.
They took the initiative, didn't just rely on the culture around them.
Precisely. And this highlights a key point Pastor Travis makes. The opposition we face for our faith, while it feels huge, is actually overrated when compared to God's power working in us.
Overrated opposition. That's a perspective changer. Yeah. Sometimes challenges feel like everything, but remembering Christ's power, it reframes it.
It totally does. And the sermon flips it, calling it an overcoming opportunity.
An opportunity.
Yes. Paul encouraged Timothy to stand strong, despite knowing tough times, even persecution, were coming. For us, too, faith provides the power to overcome. The goal is always pointing people, the next generation, ourselves, to the cross.
That idea of generational faith, it really hits home. You see kids walk away from the faith they grew up with, and it's tough. The sermon talks about needing to pick up the baton, right?
Exactly. Don't let it drop. The genuine, unfeigned faith of Lois and Eunice equipped Timothy for his incredibly difficult job pastoring in Ephesus, which was a notoriously wicked city.
This all ties together.
It really does. That faith wasn't just theoretical. It prepared him for battle. And that connects right back to you, the listener. When you grasp your wealth in Christ, this mystery, this belonging, this power, you can cultivate that same unfeigned faith.
A faith that gives us power, love, and a sound mind, as Paul tells Timothy.
Exactly. To face whatever challenges come your way.
So, wrapping this up, the big takeaway seems to be understanding this mystery of the church, knowing our place in God's plan right now, and realizing the incredible riches we have access to in Christ, that understanding empowers us.
Yes, it empowers us to live with real, authentic, unmasked faith.
And that faith isn't just for us. It can ripple outwards, impacting future generations, creating a legacy.
That's the potential, absolutely.
Okay, so here's something to chew on. How does truly getting this mystery, that you're part of this unique time of grace, plugged into Christ's infinite resources, how does that change how you look at your problems today, your role in everything? And maybe ask yourself, what kind of authentic, unfeigned faith can you nurture right now? Not just for you, but maybe for others too. Definitely something worth reflecting on, maybe digging back into Ephesians and take a Timothy yourself.